From the bayous in Louisiana to the timber country up north, you'll find them out on the trap line chasing furs to put up on the board. Mixing up another batch of that magical stuff, chilling around the fire after the show. Hey, it's Sarah and Jeff, and maybe a guest on the Trappin' Radio.
Hi, and welcome to tonight's episode of Trapping Radio 2.0. This is Jeff Dunlap, your host for this evening. I've just been getting stuff around for the next convention. If you don't do like ADC work, animal damage control, this is kind of a slow time of year. You can still be going out getting permissions and stuff like that, but I mean, if you're gonna be real about it, it's just for trapping, it's a slow time of year. That's what's really nice about going to the conventions, is you can go there and hang out with like-minded people in your tribe, and have fun, talk about trapping, learn some stuff, and it's just awesome to go to the conventions and hang out, and lots of funny stuff and lots of big time memories happen there. We went out to the Pennsylvania convention. I'd like to thank Eric and all the guys that put that and ladies that put that on. It was just an awesome job. Eric is a heck of a guy, and he really helped us out a lot. And and they helped us unload, and that was really appreciated. I can't thank them enough for the Pennsylvania convention this year. One thing that happened is a memory my whole life will be where me and Sarah are sitting with Tammy and Tommy Bryant, and we're laughing, and we get up and go over to another camp, Larry Miller's camp, or they call him the Hammer. So, or two sticks, and we go over there, and it starts just pouring down rain. I mean, just buckets and buckets of rain. This is Saturday night, and when we go back to Tommy's camper that he had just bought, it was new to him, and their awning had broke off, from the rain. I guess you're supposed to put them away every time. If you're going to be gone for 30 seconds, you're supposed to put them away. I didn't know all this. But anyways, his awning is just like smashed right to the ground. And Tommy and Sarah are both laughing. And me and Tammy are more like-minded, looking like in shock. And then Tommy, they had put lights on this thing. And then he goes over to pick up the awning, and the lights just about electrocute him. So, and they get the guts unplugged. So, that's one of them things that, we took pictures, but in my mind, I always will remember, their brand new camper to them, the awning smashed to the ground, Tommy standing in the middle of this thing, and Sarah and Tommy laughing, and me and Tammy are in shock. I'll always remember that. And, it's like anything in life. You don't make those, lifetime memories that really mean something to you. Sitting at home and, being around trappers who are kind of a crazy crowd anyways, and generally have a lot of laughs. You just seem to make even more memories. We got a real schedule this year, a real big schedule on conventions. Fur Takers is generally in June, but they moved it to the week after Nationals. So, we went to Pennsylvania, and normally we go to Fur Takers then Pennsylvania, or Pennsylvania and then Fur Takers. Generally that's what we'll do. But this time it's moved after the Nationals, so we'll be going to the Escanaba Convention and then coming home. And we'll be home for one day Sunday. Then we'll leave Monday to go to the Nationals down to Virginia. And we'll leave there and go right to Iowa to the convention for the Fur Takers. And then we have to go from there up to Minnesota convention. And then we'll go to the Iowa State Fair after that. And then we'll leave there and go right to the Michigan convention. A week off, and then I believe off to New York show, and then right to Wisconsin, right to Indiana, Illinois, and West Virginia, and I can't remember the rest. So it's going to be a like driving all over the freaking country this year. So, and you know, it's a lot of fun. I, you know, get sick of the driving, but you know, it's once you get set up, you know, your booth's set up, it ain't that bad, because you know, you wait till after the doors close and everybody goes and has fun and hanging out and laughing and joking, and they so it's lots of fun. You know, if you you know, or listen to this, never been to a trapping convention, you know, you can walk up to any flyer you want and talk, and there, anybody's glad to have you, you know. Yeah, if you're a trapper, you're just one of us, and there's not many groups in the world that are like that, where everybody's just glad everybody's there. And so, you know, if you haven't ever been to a convention, want to look them up, which one's close to you or in your state, you know, you can go on the NTA, National Trappers Association website, and under their calendar, you know, you can mess around in there and you can find, you know, a lot of them. You also can, you know, Google, you know, trapping conventions 2025, and, you know, you'll a bunch of them will pop up, or your state or whatever. So, you know, that's how you'd find them. But they have lots of demos there. People are doing demos, teaching everything they know about trapping and on specific things most of the time. And it's just a lot of fun, and you know, I encourage you to go. You know, you don't have to go there and buy anything. You know, you probably will, but you know, you don't have to. You go hang out, pay to get through the gate on some of them. Go hang out, watch, you know, two or three days of demos, and pick everybody's brain up there. Ask as many questions as you want. And you can do it all for either free to get through the gate or, like, you know, $10, $15. So, anyways, it's just, it's a lot of fun to go and, you know, hang out there and do that. Other thing I've been doing is, you know, we're getting stuff around, and, you know, Sarah went down to some family stuff in Iowa, and, but I've been getting the stuff around here for the conventions, and, you know, basically all them conventions in a row, and we've never hauled that much stuff before. But what I started having happen here is, I've had problems with raccoons before, but nothing like here this last 2 weeks. They've been getting into some of our oils and chewing the lids off. 5 gallon buckets taking the lids off somehow. Knocking them over, the stuff spills out, they are in there eating on it, shitting on it, and, you know, basically, and we had some fish oil in the pole barn on you know, carts to wheel back onto the trailer, all went through, and anyways, they knocked over a gallon and a half of fish oil, and it just went and all over the floor. So, you walk in there, and you see this, and you're like, I'm done playing this game. So, well, anyways, with the oil, if you ever have any oil spill, they sell this, like, it's like a Duff powder stuff. I can't remember the name of it. But I went and bought a big bag of floor dry. But I seen this Duff stuff up on there. I thought, well, I'll try that first. I put that powder down, sprinkled it on there. And, man, it just sucked it right out of the cement even. And it worked really good. So, you know, you might want to look into that. I can't remember the exact name, but it was like a Duff powder. And they come in a little, like a little can, almost like a tennis ball can. You just sprinkle it all over the place, and it sucks it right up. So, Sarah had caught one raccoon out here on cherry balls before she left for Iowa. And so, when she left, she didn't ask me if I wanted to check the traps or not. So, she just set the cage, you know, the door down so they didn't catch them, because we had talked about it, I guess. And anyway, so they went over and chewed up some oils and, you know, stuff like that, beaver tail oil jugs. And I was like, okay, I'm going to eliminate you. And so I moved the cage over there and I put a DP across the yard. And then I had some catnip growing out here and back, and I planted some watermelon, or not watermelon, rhubarb out here in the back. And they go over there, and these been planted for a month and a half, And anyways, they go back there, and something was digging them up. So I took and threw a drag out, saber-tooth drag with 10-foot of changes. It was a bobcat coyote setup. Threw it out in the hayfield. Anyways, I buried, you know, just blindsided that trap because I could see where, you know, the grass was matted down. And anyways, and I set a DP there, and I set like five other DPs around the yard, and some good spots, some just they got to come through here if they want to go up to the front where the stuff, most of the stuff is. And first day I had one in the cage, and I had one in the blind set back there with the it was a baited set with the you know, growing the catnip. But the thing is they weren't eating they went and ate the rhubarb, the roots and everything, and left one leaf laying there, pulled it right out of the ground. But they're not eating the catnip, they're after the roots of the catnip. So, and it's like they just dig around down in there, you know, from the with the fresh dirt. And but the weird thing is there was three of them they had dug up before, and I replanted them, and they always go back to that one. And that's where I've caught them, all in that one. So as a trapper, lure maker, I'm looking at, you know, this spot, and I'm like, what is here that, you know, was drawing them coon in to get to this spot? Because it's not the catnip, because there's other ones there, and they're not bothering them. It's something in that hole, and I'm still trying to figure it out. I may never figure it out, but I'm trying, because I see something, and I want to know why. You know, why are they going to that hole? Why are they keep digging the plant out and then keep digging in the hole after the plant's out? There's something down there, you know. So, anyway, so I caught those two. And then the next day I caught one on the back of the property and one on the side. And then this morning I only had one coon caught, and it was right back there in that, what I'm calling the blind set, in that hole. So, you know, they come right back to that hole again, another one. So, again, I like to figure out exactly what they're doing, why they're doing it, and what's pulling them to that spot. But, because if you pulled the catnip out of there, they would still go to that spot. So, and I dug the hole, so I know there's nothing hidden in there. So, anyway, so we've ended up with 6 raccoons out of our yard, and we'll see what happens tomorrow. But some people, I mean, we got, you know, got chance to beat, we can beat them down, know how to do it, just like you guys would, or women would know how to, you know, if you had a problem with the raccoons, to take care of the problem. You know, if I didn't know nothing about trapping, or taking care of a problem with the raccoons, I'd be like pulling my hair out, you know. You'd have to hire somebody to come out and do it, or Google how to do it. And, you know, that's, how we get people on our side a lot of times is, you know, they're against killing something until it's like shredding. If I was against killing stuff and then they started destroying my property, my whole attitude would change. And, you know, so that's the good thing about having social media out there, is people can look that stuff up, and, you know, when they're, you know, they do have a problem, they're able to take care of it. So, the other thing, a lot of people had asked, you know, about what we had done with our bobcats, because we caught 140 bobcats this year, and we went and sold those to Trevor Barnes, who we ended up selling them to, and we ended up right at a, just like a, it was like $99 and change So about $100 on, you know, what we got for the 100. It wasn't 140 cats because we still got a bunch of in the carcass that we want to sell, cats, you know, for taxidermy or whatever. You know, they're really nice ones. So if you're looking for a cat for taxidermy and, you know, are going to a convention, it's too hot to try and ship these things. I ain't building coolers and doing all that. If I'm going to a convention and you wanted one, I'll gladly, you know, throw it in one of our big coolers and, or, you know, whatever, a couple of them, and, you know, haul them, you know, to the convention. But as far as putting them in boxes, you know, it's just, it's too damn hot. And I'm not sending them. I'll get them next fall. I'll just get them next fall and, you know, and put them up and sell them, you know, for $100. You know, I'll take the, you know, $200-$300 loss on them just because I don't want to deal with it. So, you know, but we, like I say, we did really good on them. Well, what it comes down to is I think that we could have gotten more, you know, but, here in Northern Michigan, Jeff Haggerty was up beaver trapping. Sarah was beaver trapping down to Iowa. Just coming from the women's camp in Wisconsin, and we had a big ice storm and knocked the power out. Everything in Northern Michigan was just devastated and knocked the power out for a little over 2 weeks. And so that put us behind the eight ball on putting up the cats. And so we were, you know, two to 3 weeks behind putting up the cats. And there becomes a point where people have moved past that seasonally, you know, with the cats. And the other thing is there was other people with a lot of cats, and they had, you know, were dumping their cats. I had sold, me and Sarah didn't want to haul, we had a few, you know, like, I don't know, 20 coon left in the freezer or something like that, out to Iowa in the grease. And we took them to Iowa and met Grunewald at Funky's. And I already had the coon. If I wanted to put them up, I'd get $9 a piece of them. You know, I have that same deal every year, $9. And, you know, but that was the end of it, and we didn't want to run the freezer all year for the small amount of coon. And so we took them there and figured, well, whatever we get, you know, I was figuring $5-$6, you know. Anyways, we ended up getting $2.50 for Iowa coon. And he said that if, you know, it had been a few weeks ago, we would have, you know, he'd have paid us $5 or $6. And I'm like, okay, whatever. I'd sold him the cats last year for $100, and I met him at F&T, and I went in there, and he said that, well, let me take these with me. You know, we had, I don't know, 70, 80 cats and that we were selling, and let me take them with me. If you don't like the price, I'll make arrangements to get them back to you. And I'm like, all right. You know, so anyways, I go and tell him, you know, how many cats we got this year. He goes, wow. He says, you know, down to the Funkies in Iowa. I said, so, well, you beat me up on the coon, you know, I'll get you back on the cats, you know. And so I was supposed to meet him back in Alpena. But, yeah, you know, we're traveling all over the country. And, you know, we couldn't make it back from wherever we were in time. And so I called F&T to ask them if they would, you know, because Grunewald had a pickup route there. Will you, you know, tell them that, you know, we'll just be going back out to Iowa at some point and, you know, I'll just, you know, bring them out. So they told them, and I never heard anything. So anyways, we're getting ready to go to Iowa. And I said, well, I called there and I said, hey, is a guy there? And the guy answers the phone, says, no, can I help you with something? And I'm like, well, I wanted to talk to him about selling some cats. He asked how many we had, and I told him, I don't know, it was like 119, 120, something like that, you know, that we had on the, you know, stretch and dried. And I don't remember what his name was. Anyway, he says, well, what are you looking to get out of them? So I said, I'm looking to get $150. Now, last year they asked me what I wanted for them, and the cat market's better this year. So I'm not going to go in not the same thing. I'm going to go better. Am I thinking I'm going to get $150? No. But I'm going to go higher and then negotiate down. You know, that's how this works. So I said, well, I'd get $150. He says, you know, the cat market, you know, isn't any better than what it was last year. What did we pay you last year? I says, $100. Well, it's not no better. I'm like, every auction I'm seeing, which I fully understand, an auction is only that price for that day. But the trend is that every single auction is going up. It wasn't one guy's cherry picking one where it was a hot market with people just, you know, buying. It was, the trend was going up. And it had gone up until this fur harvesters, you know, which is, the prices were still good. They just didn't sell all the cats, and who knows what they had, you know. But he says, well, I don't know. Let me call my son. I don't remember. He was in some city in Canada. And see what he says. So I said, all right. So I'm waiting, figuring they're going to call back and, you know, do like 110 or something like that. You know, kind of dicker back and forth, you know. I mean, this is how it's supposed to work. So anyways, he calls up and he says, you know what? We got enough of cats right now. My son said, we don't need them. We can't use them. And I'm like, okay. I hang up the phone. So Sarah starts telling me, oh, it's not personal. I said, well, it feels kind of personal. You know, he had kind of a shitty attitude on the phone towards me. And I said, it feels kind of personal, but I'll take your thing. Well, I keep mulling this over in my head, right? So I'm mulling it over. And I'm like, if they didn't need any more cats, why were they, I supposed to meet him in Alpena like a week or two, I don't remember what it was. So let's say 10 days split the difference. 10 days to 2 weeks before that, and giving my cats to take down there. Now, do I think that they were going to steal my cats? Absolutely not. I don't think that. But I don't know. Something with the deal doesn't set right with me. You know, I mean, you know, I've got the cats. You know that I want you to give me a price on them. And you're so committed on it that you're going to take them from Alpena, Michigan, all the way back to Illinois. And then you don't want them. So, I don't know. The whole deal really didn't set well with me. Is there any hard feelings? Absolutely not. I'll sell them. Probably, I can't say that I'll sell them something. But I will definitely let them give me a price on stuff. I mean, you know, we catch a lot of fur. Some of it's for the, predator control. And we get rid of it. Some of it, but we keep part, like the cat. We're in Iowa. We get a lot of coon. We get a lot of fur, and they buy a lot of fur. So, you know, I don't burn bridges. And, but like I say, I just, you know, telling what my experience was on selling these cats. So, and that, it just is what it is, you know. If anybody's upset because I'm telling the story, too effing bad. It's just too effing bad because that it's my story and I can tell it. And you didn't. If you wanted it differently, then you should have acted differently. So, but like I say, there is no hard feelings, at least on my side. So, anyway, so I start calling around. I talked to Terry Manley down to Indiana. Well, he got a hold of me on Facebook, and he says, what do you want for them cats? I said, $150. And he's, okay, I can't just commit to $150, you know, without looking at them. I said, well, I totally get that, you know. So he was going to come up to Northern Michigan mushroom picking and get a hold of me. So I don't hear nothing, don't hear nothing. This is all going on, you know. Anyways, I come to find out he bought another guy's cats. I have, you know, recently found out. And so he starts telling me, rather than, hey, you know, I bought a bunch of cats and that, if you'd have beat him here, then you'd have been the winner. And he told me, he says, you won $150 for them cats. And those cats are not even worth $100. I'm like, I know that they're worth $100 because, that's what I've gotten for them. And, you know, when the price was lower than this, Clint would average $225 sometimes on them cats. So $100 is not out of line for them cats. Are they, Idaho cats or Montana cats? No. But they're way better than a Michigan cat, on the average. I mean, they got big spots. They just got short fur. I mean, you're down, southern Texas. So, anyways, I always end up hearing about all this stuff, everything that happens, But he didn't want to, he said, nope, they're not even worth $100. If you want to bring them down, I'll go through them. But, I'm just telling you, they're not even worth $100. So, I'm like, okay, nope. I'm not going down there on a deficit, driving from northern Michigan to Indiana or even driving 5 feet out of my way to sell, have somebody look at the fur that is already negative about it. I mean, that would be stupid to do that. And so come to find out, he had already bought another guy's cats. And I found out asked the guy, what'd he pay for them? He says, he gave me $100. And I'm like, you gotta be shitting me. He goes and tells me that my cats, caught in the same area, are not worth $100. But he had just paid $100 for the same type of cat. So I'm like, well, not burning no bridges, but I see this one smoking. So, so then Trevor Barnes wanted to buy them. I had another good guy buy a lot of glands off of stuff out South Dakota. Want to give a price, and he said that the best he could do, and was, I think it was like $75, I think. I can't remember. And I was telling him, I says, I got to get more than that. And on 120 some cats, $25 is quite a bit to me. And and my thing is I'm not where, basically how I'd like to run it is they say, you know what, I can get $130 out of these cats. I got to make $25 on the cats, even though they're dealing in raccoons that they're only making, a dollar on. But, I don't mind leaving some meat on the bone, I mean, there's got to be some meat on the bone for the fur buyer, or there's no sense in doing it. I mean, yes, a lot of them love to do it and would do it for nothing, but they can't do it for nothing because it costs money to do all the stuff. They have the lights on, the heat, to dry the stuff, the dehumidifiers to keep the moisture out of them, the bugs and everything else. There's a lot of expense that goes into going buying fur, and you have your money tied up. So I don't mind leaving meat on the bone. I'd rather just have somebody say, you know what, this is what I got to make on these. And, and work from there, that they grade them out and put them in 22 different piles. And then I got one raccoon at $25 and all, and then the next raccoon's at $3 and the next one's at $1. I don't like them games. I just want somebody to be honest with me and say, go through the coons and they say, I'll give you, $7 nose count or $8 nose count. I mean, that's what they're looking for. I sold fur overseas. And what they're looking for is a certain grade, so many triples, so many doubles, so many number twos, so many number threes, got to be usually in that grade, right? So, and then, so you had to have a certain grade right down from the good to the bad, and you get X amount of dollars. We were getting $27 for that grade. That was, in the 90s, late 90s. And, so, like I said, I'm sure most of you are like that too. You just rather, say, hey, I'll have them look at the coon, $7 nose count or whatever. Not the, one in the big good pile and then everything else is shit. It just, It's not no. It takes the fun out of it. You know, none of us are going out there to get rich. Maybe the best we can hope for is to pay, half of the light bill, right now. So, it just takes the fun out of it that, that when it's like that. I don't enjoy it. And, I was at a first sale one time, and I just come back from Louisiana, and I'm standing there, and I don't know, I run some of the otters through, and I know what they were selling for down there. I don't remember exactly what it was now, but, it was in the $100 otter days, and it was just starting to drop, like in 2013, probably 2014, something like that. And the price, you could figure a $100 bill on every otter, and 120, even a little bit higher. And I'm standing there running them through, and one of the fur buyers says to me, no sale. I mean, they're going, I don't know, but for like $40 or something. And I'm like, no sale, no sale, no sale. Nope, won't sell for that. And they said, I can buy every otter in Louisiana. This is in Michigan. I said, in their spring sale. I said, he says, I can buy every otter in Louisiana for, X amount. And I just come from there, and I was at, Mr. Jimmy's down to RP Outdoors, and, he bought more otter than anybody. And, I knew what the prices were down there, and they're paying more down in Louisiana than they wanted to pay for those. So I'm like, okay. And the guy was standing, right behind me, and he's giving me lip and giving me lip. And I'm like, I turned around and I said, you can close your effing mouth or I can close it for you. The thing is it wasn't personal with me. It was just a business transaction where I have a product. You want to buy the product. I want this amount. You want to pay this amount. We meet in the middle. But with him, he was creating it to be, it was becoming personal. And it, to me, it's not a personal thing. It's just a business transaction. That's in the end, that's all it is. I have a product. They want to buy the product. We meet in the middle and you sell them or you don't, I've had, met trucks before where they took the fur and I didn't want to sell the rats. So it was too, 2010, 11, something like that. And they, I sold the coon. I didn't want to sell the rats, and they threw them at me back through the window. And, I wouldn't take 100 guesses to figure out that, who that was, that never sat well with me. If you buy fur, people just, the thing is people say crooked fur buyer. There's no crooked fur buyer. They've got to make money. And the thing is, you can't be crooked if he offers something and you take it. It's like Grunewald. He wasn't crooked for paying me $2.50 for $6 raccoon. I didn't have to take it. There was nothing crooked. We made a business transaction. That's all it was. Was I happy with the price? Absolutely not. Was he happy with the price? Probably he wasn't happy either. He'd have liked to give me $20. He doesn't want to, do that, but it just is what it is. And, so basically if you're a fur buyer, all people want to do is be treated, like you like to be treated. And, if you're a trapper dealing with the fur buyer, realize he does have to make some money. And, he don't have to make it all on you. If you got a $100 bobcat, I wouldn't sell it to him for $10. He ain't got to make his whole damn check on you. So, anyways, speaking of the bobcats, what I've been doing is last couple nights I've been doing it, is going through, because we set out a ton of cameras, tax cameras. And paying them by the month is no fun. But we just had it for like 2 months, But, you know, we wanted to learn as much as we could, and because, you know, that's just what I enjoy. I enjoy learning about the animal, and it makes me a better trapper and a better lure bait maker to see how they react to stuff. And the what I've come to the conclusion on is the more that I learn, the dumber I really am. You know, I mean, I know that was that sounds counterintuitive, but you know, it's like I think I know, you know, generally, you know, the bobcats react this way and do that and do this, and you know, and you're wrong sometimes. I'm wrong so much. I mean, it's just, it's pathetic how wrong I am. I mean, we caught 140 this year, and I don't think I know shit. I you know, I watch them, the cameras, and the cat walks by, and he walks up to the set, and then, you know, he does this, and then he does a cut through behind the set, and the thing is, what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to try and show some of that footage, but for, I'm going to try and do some videos with that footage where it's like a talk over, you know, where I'm explaining, you know, the set's here, this is what's happening, you know, rather than just put the video up and then people draw their own conclusions and they're wrong because they don't know where the sets are, they don't know this, they don't know that, and, you know, then the people say, well, you know, trapping bobcats is easy. I set out 6 coyote sets and caught 2 bobcats. Yeah, but you weren't trapping for bobcats. You were trapping for coyotes and accidentally caught a bobcat, you know? I mean, I used to think I was a hell of a otter trapper when I was in Michigan. I didn't know nothing. I didn't know nothing until I got where there was a lot of otter and I really started learning, you know, a lot of how they change their habits with pressure put on them and, you know, same way with the bobcats, you know, I mean, you know, I go out here in Michigan and set bobcat sets, and I could catch bobcats. But, you know, until I start going out of state where there's, I'm just trying to catch every single bobcat I can. And then especially when I start putting the cameras on, you know, first the otter and the beaver and the water animals down in Louisiana to see how they reacted. And I'm like, they reacted this, you know, where they won't go through the traps and stuff, where normally, you know, you would go down to the set and you would check it, nothing. Come back next day, check it, nothing. Come back next day, you got a beaver. Then you check it for a couple more days. You know, and this is like a crossover, and you just think, well, the one beaver came through. But you put the camera on it, and an otter comes up there and sniffs the trap and goes around it, and another otter, and 2 beaver, and, you know, a nutria. And, you know, you've had all kinds of activity by your trap. Anyways, so basically that got in my head, trying to figure this all out, you know. And then, so I'm like, if the bobcats, or if the otter and the beaver are like this, then how tough, what do the coyotes and the cats, and, you know, do on land? It's got to be way worse than this. You know, because the trap placement's different. I mean, I'm blocking down with a 330 the whole crossover. You know, they can't go around hardly. I got all blocked and camoed down, and they still see that trap and won't go through it sometimes. So, you know, it's got to be way worse on land with, you know, bedding that trap, trying to blend it in. And I was right. It is way worse, you know, because you do everything you can, and you set up that cat set, and there he goes, just chicken necking. So you see that he sees that set and has interest in it, but he doesn't go over there. And then you get them doing the same thing, and then they'll come back around and walk up to your set and approach it from a different way than what you had it set up. Or, you know, they'll do this or do that. And it's just a freaking nightmare, you know. On a lot of our cat sets, we started using 2 traps. So we, you know, start seeing the footage that, you know, it's hard to control, you know, on some of the sets we were making. There was that was pulling the cats in, not every cat, but pulling cats in. It was hard to pattern where they exactly was going to step. We'd block them in and stuff, but we would You know, it was better with two traps on one drag. And, you know, it started being a lot better because we could set one back and set one forward. And then, you know, whatever way they went. You know, so basically on the, you know, I encourage anybody if they, you got a, you know, trail cams to definitely go out and set them because, you know, you'll find you're going to learn more off of that than watching most people's videos or going to demos or anything, because that's on your trap line. You can even go out and make mock sets and, you know, draw a circle with your finger and then try and get them to step in the circle and see how they react to it. And, you know, so you'll learn more off of that because you know that ground, and you'll see them do stuff and react to stuff in a place that you know, and learn so much from it. You know, but like I say, I'm going to put out and see how it works on, you know, doing the voiceover. I don't ain't too confident in that, the voiceover part, but, I'm definitely going to put them out. So, you know, cause I, that footage we have will definitely help people. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, a lot of people, you know, say, well, come out with a Bobcat DVD or whatever. I'm done with that part of my life. I don't want to come out with any DVDs. I just want to put out footage and help people, help trappers. I don't have to, you know, I got DVDs, you know, probably in the next couple of years, probably end up, you know, taking them right off the market. You know, my opinions, you know, changed on a lot of stuff. You know, I mean, I think differently now than on even raccoon trapping than the first raccoon trapping video I made. Well, is there information in there that would help somebody starting out? Absolutely. You know, but, you know, there's some things I've changed my mind on. But that's the way it should be. You know, I mean, if you're stuck in the same thing that you were doing 20 years ago, you know, I mean, you should have learned something to make you better and change your opinion. You know, that happens to me all the time. You know, and with the cat trapping, I definitely keep my mind, you know, not fixed on the, you know, I know this and, you know, I'm not going to change. I'm as fluid on to change by what I see as, you know, the ocean is, you know, or water. You know, that's how fluid I am to change in a second. And I'm not talking about change everything, just something to key on that I see them doing. You know, like I say, when we started putting two traps because we could see we couldn't control their foot, you know, their foot pattern and stuff, you know, like we wanted to. And the name of the game is, you know, when you get there, to have something in the trap or traps. It doesn't matter. You know, like some people will probably say, you know, I can use just one trap. Great. I couldn't. I'm not as great as you. I don't claim to be as great or wonderful. I just do what I do and try and make it work and successful. You know, I don't, if I thought setting three traps would be better, I'd set three. I don't care. You know, my thing is I'm past the point in my life where I'm trying to impress somebody, and do something with me, have just one trap. You know, so, you know, I mean, when we're coyote trapping, do we use two? Sometimes, most of the time we're using one. You know, if I'm going to, you know, do like a chimney type set, you know, a chimney type set that, I'm talking about is because, like, if you put a dirt hole in, right, you put a dirt hole in, and then, you know, you figure you don't have a flue on that. So, you know, there's just a little bit trickling out of that hole. If you go on the back side of that and take like just a little rod, and then you punch a hole down into your dirt hole to give that a flue through there, you know, it'll push that smell out a lot better, right? But if the wind switches on you and coming out the back way on that set, then that is where you put the flue in, then that's where the scent's coming out and where they're going to come up to. So on that set, I always backset it, you know, because you got the predominant wind. And then, you know, any more with the weather, like today, it's, you know, 60 degrees. It was 100 degrees yesterday, 100 degrees the day before. It's going to be 83 tomorrow. You know, it ain't like the old days, you know, where it's, you know, constant weather patterns. They're, you know, it's up and down, up and down. It's been like that for like 2 years now or longer. And, you know, so that's why I use, you know, that flu set that, you know, so when that wind changes, they're not working the back of that set and I don't have a trap there. But, you know, so like in them type of sets, or if I get dug out, you know, and back set them, you know, they'll have two traps. But generally, on like coyote trapping, we just use, you know, generally one, unless it's like something like I described, or a blind set. You know, but we, you know, you only can go out there and do the best that you can do. I mean, that's all. And the thing is, to me, trying different things is the fun part. You know, I mean, I don't want to go out and punch in, you know, 100 dirt holes all day long. You know, I mean, I like going and getting there, and like down to Texas, you know, I got lots of, you know, loose dirt and sand, and I can see tracks. Where here in northern Michigan, you don't see a lot of coyote tracks. But, you know, I like to go look around and dink around and set the traps, and, you know, and me and Sarah's mentality on it are about the same, you know, so, you know, it doesn't cause problems, except for she likes checking and I like setting. If I could just go and set and then never go back, or go check it once and then never go back, I would be perfectly content. I just like setting. You know, where Sarah, she's, you know, like most people, not everybody, but most people, she doesn't like the setting as much as checking. If she had to do one or the other, she would check. And I'm the opposite. So what I'd like to do is, you know, just put them on one time, put them on GPS, and, you know, I go set them and she checks them, but we just enjoy going together doing it. So, you know, and I think if she didn't set the trap, she wouldn't enjoy checking as much. And especially with the coyotes, most times she kicks my ass. So, you know, I mean, she's gotten to be a really good coyote trapper on picking, you know, the micro locations. I mean, you know, I almost have, if you see a tuft of grass or something that like just sticks out where it's screaming coyote, you better be at breakneck speed getting up there, because otherwise you're going to hear her, you know, pounding in her set over there, you know, and, she moves quicker than I do anymore. So, but she definitely does a great job. And, I've been really, really blessed to have her in my life and, you know, be able to go have all the trapping adventures with her. You know, I mean, just this last year, we, you know, did, you know, trips of the lifetime, four or five times, you know, and, you know, going to New York and Fisher trapping and, you know, with Chappie and, you know, and, you know, going down to Texas with Albert and going to, you know, Arkansas with, Carl and Liz from Razorback Snares, you know, and, you know, I mean, you know, it's just, we're blessed to have friends, you know, where we can go do that stuff, and to have Chappie come out to Iowa coon trapping with us, and, you know, Nick and Jeff come down there, and, you know, it's just, you know, we're very blessed to have the, you know, the trapping friends that are really like family, you know, in our lives. And, you know, the thing is, if you're out there and want to go do that stuff, you can have that same thing. I mean, you go to the conventions and meet somebody and start talking to them and get to be friends with them, you know, and then, you know, opens up the door to go do stuff together. And, you know, I used to trap alone all the time. All the time. I never trapped anybody that wasn't family. You know, I was raised where, you know, a friend today is an enemy tomorrow, you know, talking about, you know, business stuff, and you don't teach anybody anything. And, you know, it was all, and when I got into this business, got back into it, because my dad had done it for years, and I did it, you know, went with as a kid and then as a teenager, and then the price dropped out and he, you know, just sold locally. I told myself, I think I'm gonna start going back to conventions. And He said, if you're going to go to conventions and you're going to really try this, you can't make the mistake that I made. I said, well, what was that? And he said, you got to tell what you know, and teach people, everything you know. You can't keep anything back. And I've tried to adhere to that advice. Whatever I know about bobcat trapping, I'm going to tell you or show people at demos or do videos on it. Everything I know, which turns out by the cameras, isn't a hell of a lot, but when I learn one little trick, I'm going to share that. I don't keep anything back on the in the trapping. I try to show everything that I know, and somebody goes out and catches 100 bobcats a year. Can I help them? Probably not. But they might pick up one little thing. I know I pick up something from them. The guy that's just getting into it and lives in northern Michigan and wants to catch one bobcat, it might help him. And that's who I'm trying to help. It turns out I know less than I thought I did. And I thought I didn't know a lot. It's fun. It's really fun just learning the animals and finding one little trick that works. And the weird thing is you do, we go down there and do that this year, and you go down there next year, and the same type of, you make the same set, and the set doesn't work. So you got to figure out all over again. So anyway, I guess that'll be where we'll close, but hoping to see a lot of you at the conventions. I appreciate so much everybody coming up, and Trapper's been good to me my whole life, and I basically, if it wasn't for Trappers, I wouldn't have anything, and I just appreciate everybody coming to conventions, and they buy stuff off us and sit around and bullshit, and we have a lot of fun, and I know you could go down the row and buy off somebody else and, probably have success with their stuff, but you choose to come and buy mine, and I really do appreciate that. And, I try and put out a good product. I want you to be successful, and, I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of you, and, I want to hear your trapping tales, and, I just love hearing, some crazy thing that happened on your line this year. I just, it's just fun. If you learned a little trick, I'm open to, anything that you want to share. And, I am not too proud to try and learn or pick up a trick or anything. So just stop by the booth. Me and Sarah will be glad to see you at the Nationals. We'll have Chuck there. And Chuck's thing is Chuck says, sniffs her, or not sniffs, smells are free, So if Chuck said it, it's got to be true. And that would be Chuck that you don't know how to say his last name if you're on Facebook. It's Chuck CZHEZKI or something like that. Anyways, how you say his name, and you're going to be laughing, is Chuck Chunky. That's how you say his name. How they come up with Chunky on that, I have no freaking idea. But I know Chuck for a long time. I mean, after a while, you're like, shit, I hate to ask him what his damn last name is. So I'd had a few beers, which I ain't drinking these days. But I had a few beers, and I asked him, I says, what in the hell is your name? And last name, Chuck. And he says, Chuck Chunky. And then he explained the whole thing. If you care about the story, ask Chuck at the booth, his whole story on the Chuck Chunky. If you know his last name, it is definitely not Chunky. So, at least I never seen that on any candy bar, any type of chocolate where it said Chunky was not spelled like Chuck's last name. So, So anyways, we'll see you at, hopefully at one of the conventions. If you're going to be at them, ones that we're not going to be at, you always can buy our products from any of the wholesalers. You can buy them on CheeTraps.com. Predator Control Group, which we own, you know, you can buy that. Dunlap Lures, you have to go somewhere else, because if we sent that out, I wouldn't be able to tell you all my bobcat trapping stories. I would have to send home and send stuff out. So, anyways, I'm out of here. See you at the conventions.